Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the March 24 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists today include Dale Durkles of AgriVisor out of Bloomington, Illinois, Roy Huckabee of the Lynn Group from Chicago, Illinois, Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing from right here in Champaign County, and Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. Please do look up our website online at willag.org.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at agrigold.com.
Dale Durkles, what's on the list of things we should discuss for the day?
I think we ought to talk about whether the general tenor and commodity price attitude has changed.
Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing.
Yeah, I think I would agree with Dale on that. I think that just the economics and the change that we've seen here from the central bank standpoint, but also I think we should talk about the stocks and acreage report coming up next week.
Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities.
How much of a change in the estimated planted acres for corn or beans is it going to take to move these markets up or down?
And Roy Huckabee of the Lynn Group.
Well, I'm very concerned about the value of the dollar. It's been one of the reasons that the U.S. Has had increased competition from around the world. And if the dollar is topped out, maybe that competition goes away.
So let's continue on that discussion point, Roy. Why is it you're concerned about it?
Well, I think that in the beginning, when the Brazilian real broke down last fall, in September and October, the Brazilian was looking at local prices equal to $17, $18 a bushel on beans and $7 or $8 a bushel on corn. And I think it's caused an expansion in their production that will continue to compete with us. And I think that the same thing's happened in Argentina to a lesser extent.
So your fear is that the dollar will not come down in value and that that will continue to be the case and there will be supply competition from South America?
Well, what I'm afraid of is that as their currencies are depreciated versus the dollar, their income is better than the income in the U.S., and it would lead to U.S. exports being a smaller share of the world trade.
By how much do you think? Any idea?
Well, I think it's very difficult to anticipate because you've got an initial flush when their currency devalued the first time. Now we have to see what happens because now it's going to cost them more to import inputs as well. So we have to see how this all works out in the world trade. But from my point of view, if the dollar makes another leg up, and of course that's going to be tied to what the Fed does with rates. If the Fed raises rates here in the U.S., while the rest of the world is trading negative interest rates, the dollar is going to gain. And if the dollar gains, it's very negative to our competitive feel in the grain markets around the world.
So your fear is twofold then, that the Fed will raise rates, the dollar will strengthen on its own in the United States, and the currencies in other parts of the world will continue to fail economically?
Well, I don't see anybody that is doing anything to make their currency strong. The Brazilian real rallied here over the last 2 weeks, but it's only because it was shortcoming, not because it was anything positive going on in Brazil.
And finally, I'll stay with you for just one more second, Roy. Is there really that much more opportunity for the production of commodity agricultural products around the planet, even if there is the economics incentive to plant?
Well, I think that the one place, there's two places actually where we can see additional production. That's in the FSU, especially around Ukraine, and it's in Brazil. Argentina can expand, but pretty marginally. And of course, the U.S. is pretty well maxed out now. So I think that those are the two areas. And, you know, we saw it 15 years ago in India. India looked at $8 wheat prices and said, we're not going to pay those again. They increased their domestic wheat support prices by 30%, and they've been an exporter of wheat ever since. So there's another example of how the action in a foreign country can affect what's going on with the U.S.
And finally, this is all because commodities are priced in U.S. dollars.
Correct. World trade tends to be priced in U.S. dollars. I think that the decision last week by the Fed to not raise rates may have been tied to a G20 meeting where there was a discussion about how the world was not doing very well economically, and a lot of it was tied to the strength of the dollar. And I think there was a push to have the dollar, devalued is not the right term, but to slow its ascent. And that was one of the reasons why we did not see an increase in interest rates.
And this keeps you bearish corn, soybeans, and wheat short-term or long-term, or both?
Well, I think that the world has plenty. And inventories are burdensome in corn, burdensome in wheat, burdensome in beans. Probably most in beans and least in corn. But, you know, you're looking at the wheat trade today. U.S. hard wheat is $40 away from being competitive with the FSU. Soft wheat is $30, $35 a ton away from being competitive. And how do you anticipate that the U.S. is going to be a supplier to the world? Right now, we're the most residual we've been in a long time.
A couple of things, Todd, are really kind of important, and I'm not disagreeing with you, Roy. It's just a couple of things I think people need to be wary of. First off, I'm real hesitant in looking at a lot of these dollar indices, whether it's the Fed or the one that, you know, a lot of the wire services carry, and they're a little different, simply because about 60% of that value, because they're based on some kind of a trade weightings oriented to European currencies. So I'm really more in the camp that I'm looking at how the dollar fares against individual currencies like the Brazilian real or like the Chinese yuan or like the Argentine peso, the people that really have an impact to us. And I won't disagree with Roy, you know, the rebound we've had here in the Brazilian real, even the Argentine peso over the last couple of weeks looks more like, you know, a wave of short covering. But you know, we've got to understand and respect, you know, the real in a sense. It's really at a very low level, or has been getting down to where it was worth about a quarter. And when you look at the Argentine peso, when you look at some of those charts in particular, and just looking at the charts, you know, we're really kind of double topping, it seems, to where we were after it was allowed to float with the new election. So with more confidence in Macri, maybe we see the peso take a more positive approach. Brazil is kind of an unknown because we've got these possible impeachment proceedings, and I'm not sure how to read that into the mix at this point just yet. Another thing in regard to Brazil that a lot of people, you know, I think need to be careful about, he addressed one part of it here in talking about the decline in the real, what has happened with cost of inputs. And we're already seeing, you know, producers already starting to reach out and lock in inputs going forward. But in fact, if you go down to some data and I look at some stuff from IMEA up in Mato Grosso, their input costs in terms of fertilizer and chemicals jumped sharply last year. And a lot of people were only referencing and talking about the prices the Brazilian producers are seeing and really totally ignored the inputs on the crop that we're just now harvesting. So some of this has already been in place in my mind. And amid all this, I really kind of step back and referencing where I was at. I think when you look at the lows we had in commodity indices back in January and the kind of rebound that we've had here, I think we have come to a low watermark in terms of bearish commodity psychology. We had the continuous commodity index, the old CRB, it rallied all the way from 350, and we were up into the 390s until the last couple of days. Overdone itself, but I think we're seeing a lot of indications the whole bear commodity thing has come to an end for now.
So this is the change in tenor you were talking about up front. Let's get
right.
A measure and see of those who are here, and we have two more to talk with and to get an idea where they stand. Bill Mayer, would you think that there's a change in the tenor in the trade and for you in particular?
Well, I think that what we've seen here, and Roy touched on this whenever we saw the Fed decline to raise interest rates, which everybody was expecting, but it was more the fact that they forecasted they probably wouldn't be raising interest rates near as much as what they thought this year. I mean, I guess to me that kind of showed that they're willing to jump in the game too, and like Roy said, not necessarily devalue the dollar, but trying to weaken the dollar, it looks like. And I think it boils down to the central banks in general, and do people have the confidence in the central banks that they can manage the currencies in the world? And I think we're finding out that the answer is no, not really. And that means that investors would like to put money in anything but, the money, currency. And I think that's probably leads somewhat to a little bit more inflationary type environment for the commodities, or could. And that's probably the flux that we're in the markets right now when it comes to this subject is, you know, where are we going to come out on this thing? And is there a little touch of inflation in the markets now, or hint of?
And so I guess I would take that as you saying, my tilt is bearish, but I believe that their money flow could be into commodities, so that gives me a more friendly insight on just the agriculturals. Is that right?
Yeah, and we do have to take the fundamentals into account, and we do have surpluses around the world in the three major commodities that we're interested in anyhow. So I think that, you know, that still keeps the lid on things for sure.
Wayne, better take your temperature there, too, at L&M Commodities.
Well, the first thing, I understand the first year when their dollar drops and they get many more pesos when they sell their grain because of the exchange rate. But their fertilizer has to cost them a lot more pesos. Their seed has to cost them a lot more pesos. Their machinery has to cost them a lot more pesos. And it's just sort of like here, you know, back when we got out of school, you earned so much and a car cost about a half or a fourth what it does now. And now we're earning a lot more, but we're paying a lot more, so are we better off? I think the one thing that I'm looking at and really considering is how in the world are we going to keep raising our prices when our basis level, you know, we're $50 a ton over Brazil on meal at our at the Gulf compared to their ports. How do we sell ours, even if it is sort of inflating or going up a little bit here? It's nice, but you got to move it out of the country.
So, Roy, I think this comes back for me to next week's acreage reports and the census that agriculture, relatively speaking, is taking. It's a report, I know, but not a census. At this point, I think some 80,000 producers and landowners around the United States, they should get a pretty good idea of what their indication will be like for the spring planted crops. Will producers in particular areas change their minds and change the mix? Will they lay things aside and fallow? Will they pasture beef cattle? What do you think will happen?
Well, I think that we're seeing a lot of beef cattle stay on wheat in the panhandle, Texas, Oklahoma, western Kansas. It's the cheapest feed they've got. They're paying 50 cents a pound to add $1.60 a pound worth of beef. And I think that will help alleviate some of the wheat issues. I think that the frost that we had over last weekend, we probably lost 25 or 30 million bushels of hard wheat. So maybe there's a change there developing, but I think it's important to note that we're $40 a ton over the world trading prices. on hard wheat, and I don't think that we can do any more exports than what we're doing to those Latin American countries right around us. So I think wheat is a dead duck. We've got more than what we can use, and I think that it can't develop a rally. Now, in 96, when we had a frost and we lost a lot of wheat, we rallied for wheat $2. But that rally lasted for about 45 days, and then all of a sudden, as we got into the summer months, we started doing harvest. The government had overestimated the reduction in wheat by 180 million bushels, so we were right back down. We traded wheat lower than we were prior to the frost. And that was when we were much more competitive and we were doing a larger share of the world's trade. At this point right now, I just don't see how a rally in wheat can make us any more competitive. And I think when you look at the corn market, we had issues last year because Brazil sold corn into the Asian markets. And I think the important thing to recognize about Brazil's corn production is that we showed them $8 a bushel corn prices, and my goodness, they decided they could double crop corn in that country. And for the last 3 years, the safrinha corn acres in Brazil has grown dramatically so that it's two-thirds or it's half again bigger than their first-year crop. It's almost double the first-year crop. So that's my point, is that there's an ability to expand production, and they've learned to do it. And we've turned it on for them because of the problems we had over the last 3 years. So I'm of the opinion that they're going to be a problem for us. Last year, they sold beans for SEP Ocnol. This year, with the bean crop bigger than it was last year, they're going to sell beans for SEP Ocnol Dis. And the market's not talking about it, but I feel I've got an import number on corn for the U.S. this year that's 100 million bushels. It's 50 million bigger than the USDA's using. And we're not going to see that until we start seeing the Brazil corn land in the southeast starting in July. Last year, when they got that big whoosh in the Brazilian currencies, September and October, that farmer sold 35% of his corn, 35% of his beans before he had ever even put a seed in the ground. And the exporter says, oh, God, we bought all this on a long basis. Where do we get rid of it? And the southeast U.S., we were still looking at very strong corn basis back then. And I think you're going to be amazed at how many vessels of corn come into the southeast. And I'm not just talking about Wilmington. I think it'll come in to Purdue. I think it'll come into the Mobile, Alabama, Pascagoula, all those southern ports. Everybody's going to be bringing corn in. And the demand for domestic use of corn in the southeast starting late in the summer is just going to absolutely die. And we got plenty of corn left over. So I'm worried about that. I suppose I should talk about beans. The South American guys have, the weather watchers down there tried to destroy their bean crop 10 times with the weather patterns that were over Brazil, and it just never happened. Their crops have materially improved, and the weather has turned more positive. They're into their harvest about 60 or 65% done. The northern states, Mato Grosso, is pushing 88 to 90% done. And they're going to be a thorn in our side for the whole year competing in the export markets.
Dale Durkles, I know you've done some work looking back historically on supply across the planet, what that really means and how the market has reacted. Did you find anything of interest?
You know, it's kind of, I'm really kind of curious in one sense. You know, everybody, and this has been something I've talked about for a long time, have talked about how the world supplies are so bearish, you know. And when you look at corn and wheat combined, or, you know, you have one entity that owns 40% of what will arguably be our ending stocks of corn and wheat for this marketing year, the Chinese government. You know, and you take them out of the mix, and, you know, around the world, we're not holding the burden that some people want to really make it out to be. Another thing I took a look at here, and it kind of goes hand in hand with the thoughts about bearishness, taking a look at price structure itself, you know, you're making some assumptions. But I went back and looked at, you know, other times when we had quote-unquote surpluses. And on corn, for example, the high of the year was somewhere in the ballpark of about 28-29% over the low. And you know, if you assume the 348 low we had here recent on nearby futures would hold up, that says we had to go to 445. In 91, it was a little more tepid. We only rallied 20%, but that seemed kind of anomaly. And you could say the same thing about beans. If the 8.5 mark holds up as a low, you ought to rally somewhere in the 1050, 1080 area. Looking at past years, the late 80s, the early 2000s, you know, and in the 1990s, what kind of high-low range that we saw. And everybody just has this bearish attitude like prices are going to go nowhere. But if you look back at past periods when we've had bearish attitudes and surpluses, prices rally for some reason, and nobody seems to want to address that at all. All bear markets come to an end is what I'm saying. And when you look at what's happened, you know, in the general commodity indices or in crude oil, take crude, for example, January, we had a real bearish. We allowed a new producer into the mix vis-a-vis Iran, and the market rallied from 27 and recent, we got up to 42. And what really changed fundamentally? Nothing, but the market rallied. And you can say the same thing about commodity indices that I talked about earlier, the same thing. And I think those are really the precursors of telling you the bear market itself has gotten itself exhausted. They always come to an end. And like all good bear markets, although not to the exaggerated level like bull markets, they do tend to get exaggerated on the downside. And I think that's part of what we're seeing in the mix here over the last couple of months.
Wayne Nelson, soybeans have rallied substantially, enough that the technicals, the moving averages, are beginning to cross each other. Can you tell me about where we are at this point in the technical side of the marketplace?
Well, I think that, you know, we've crossed over into the above the 200-day moving average, and we're looking at basically trying to break out and shoot on up a little bit. I think we had a golden cross where the 50-day crossed over and went above that like that. So, you know, we're looking at a very strong technical market, especially the way we closed tonight. We're looking at a very fundamentally weak market, and it's awfully hard to try to decide what's going on. If you listen to Dale's argument, it makes great sense because most rallies start when you don't think it should go. But, boy, to look at this, the basis levels that we are at our Gulf, at the ports, and the basis levels that they are in Argentina and Brazil, it's awfully hard to see $10 beans.
Bill Mayer, you have anything to add as we continue this conversation?
Well, let's talk a little bit about what we do about it. I think that's one of the things that our listeners listen to the show for. I think we're looking at two different situations when we're looking at soybeans and looking at corn, at least from a fundamental standpoint. I think when you look at the global situation in soybeans, it's very hard to see, even with some reduction in acres possibly here and some, you know, expect maybe not as good a yields as we had a year ago or the last 2 years, it's still hard to see getting stocks down to levels where you're going to see, you know, a huge rally in this market, it looks to me like. So I've been of the stance that I think a producer really needs to take advantage of this rally that we've had. We're about what, Wayne, I think 45 cents or so off the February insurance price levels now.
Yeah.
That we've rallied. So, I mean, I think that's a sign that the producer needs to be looking at getting some sales on the books here, to put it quite simply, on the soybean side. On the corn side, I think you're looking at a little bit tighter situation, especially in the U.S., and when you take into consideration what Dale was saying, how much of the corn is owned by the Chinese government globally, it seems like we have some potential there from a price standpoint, more so than we do on beans, in my estimate anyhow. So I think that a person has to be or can be a little bit more patient on the corn. You've got the government ARC program kind of below you here at this point. But realistically, if we go into this next 30 days, we've got this report next week, which is important, but from an acreage standpoint, probably more important is what the weather looks like. And if we go in and really see a real push to get corn in the ground, I think that's hard to say that's not going to be bearish on the corn market. So going into the report next week, I think if we look at some possibilities of maybe putting some floors in, maybe with some buy, put, sell, call type strategies, min-max, that type of thing, that you can get through some of the elevators, just to get at least your non-insured bushels maybe have some kind of a floor on them.
Wayne, you agree on the soybean side in making new crop sales, and what do you do about corn? And then maybe you should address acreage and the report next week.
Well, I think as far as that, we've been hanging back on making any corn sales here ourselves, too. We're trying to get up a little bit more, but we're getting closer to that mark. I mean, as we project and get up, that $4 and above level, it's time to be thinking about doing something. As far as the beans, I think that there's a lot of people here at the 920 mark, especially those in the south that are getting an over basis that's looking at clearing, maybe 920, 930 cash price, and that's a pretty good place to get first few on. As far as the numbers, we're hearing that South Dakota or North Dakota is going to stay sort of strong on corn. Acres they thought they were maybe going to be idled or go back to pasture, something there might still be coming in there. And a lot of these guys that have high cash rent, let me tell you, they're going to go with corn because they can only push their beans. They're getting about 60 bushel, and that's about it. But their corn, that can vary as much, another 30 or 40 bushel. A lot of them are getting that 230 bushel, 240 bushel corn, and they're saying the extra bushels could maybe put more to the top so they can pay that cash rent.
Do you think the cash rent acres push acreage for corn enough that it shows up in the stats?
I don't know if it will or not. I do know that most of the guys over here are going one way. Some of the guys that flip back and forth are the guys with higher cash rent are going with more corn acres.
Wayne, do you think that's more of a regional situation, though, that if you're in some of the more fringe areas that maybe it's more on the bean, not quite as prevalent where you see the cash rent acres going to corn?
I don't know. I know that basically where they're paying the high cash rents is where they're going to stay with more corn acres. And I don't think the fringe areas have the high cash rents.
Yeah, I guess that's really the point.
Yeah, so which would come back to the question as to whether it really changes the acreage mix very much at all. And I think you suggested it probably wasn't enough to push acreage mix. Does anybody disagree with that? I didn't think so. Dale, I'm really interested to know, since you're feeling the tenor of the marketplace, I think, is changing, what you think about new crop sales for both soybeans and corn.
New crop sales, I'm really playing a game of being patient. Old crop beans at this point, I'm willing to part out and sell some beans here. We've had a rally that's carried 60, 70 cents, whatever. It could go a little bit further yet, and technically it could go another 20, 30 cents up, technically, but that's a given change. It could come on any given day. So I'll sell some old beans. Old corn, I still express some patience in at this juncture. I think it's a little premature. And both new crops, I'm just willing to sit back and watch the picture unfold. When you get into the acreage mix, and I've had some interesting discussions with Daryl off and on via email, mostly over the last year. When you look at the correlation between prices or crop insurance guarantees and acres, Rocky Mountains to the east, I think we're losing acres again this year. Now, depending on how the prevent plant comes out, I could see the mix of acres of planted to all crops, all states, Rocky Mountains east end up being about the same. But I don't know that the USDA was that far off on their numbers that we had back here in February. It'll be interesting to see what some of the trade numbers come out in here probably over the weekend now. But I'm willing to be patient long haul. I have some cyclic things that suggest, the thing's getting ready to turn up in beans and wheat. We're really in that same mix. Corn, we actually bottomed back in 14. Then again, the low we put in commodity indices and crude oil in January, to me, is going to stand up as a three-year low. So I'm willing to see how the picture unfolds rather than get anxious on new crop, where I have a lot of time to market that crop yet.
So, Roy, we probably better get this question answered from you as well.
Well, I'll be quite blunt. I think that the acreage numbers this next week are going to be very important. But to me, my carryout of corn next year is 2-3. I think corn makes a new low. I think we take corn to 275. I don't see us able to hold the bottoms. I think beans have a dollar and a half down in them. I think we take beans to 750. My carryout in beans is over 700 million bushels. Now, we can't do that. Something's got to change to fix that. But that's what I see. And I think that you have to recognize what's created this technical signal that we're looking at. We had funds that got to a record, all-time record short position, wheat, corn, beans, meal. And we're in the process of chasing those shorts away. The fundamentals are more bearish today than they were 4 months ago. And I think they went out in the long run.
So, Roy, when you suggest that, is it the funds that are being operated by humans or funds that are being operated by computers that have caused what I'll call the differentiation between the fundamental marketplace and the technical marketplace?
Well, I differentiate those two groups of people as the computer-driven fund is the high-frequency trade guy. And he doesn't care if the market goes up or goes down. He makes a living off of creating stop action and knowing how far those stops will carry, and he's predatory. But the traders, the guy that has $40 million to a guy that has $1 billion under management, and he's still a trend trading guy, managed to be very, very short. And all we've done is cause him to come in and cover his shorts. And he's not done. He's got long beams now. And he's getting close to being out of his shortened meal. But I don't think that the fundamental picture will allow us to turn the market into a uptrending trade and carry forward. I just don't see it.
Dale Durkles, do you have an answer for that one?
You know, the only thing you can say, you know, you can't argue against him at this point in time, but, you know, for the negative fundamental structure that Roy presents going forward, you know, I can also flip around and present anybody at this point a more positive fundamental structure going forward, and we can argue with each other about it until we're blue in the face because neither one of us can prove out either way. You know, because we really don't know how many acres we're going to plant. We don't know the weather here nor around the world, nor do we know the yield of the crops there. So we really don't know production numbers moving forward, you know, and that's why I go back and tend to rely on some things in the technical field and especially cycles, because they do give you some benchmarks of maybe things are changing. And that's really where I'm coming from at this point in time, and that it does seem like we're in one of those windows here where things are changing. And I'm not saying I'm a long-term bull or anything, but I'm just saying I think the downside has potentially exhausted itself. I found it kind of ironic. I was looking earlier this week, had looked at one aspect of the commitment of traders for a long time. It's kind of curious for all the bears that we have in the wheat market that actually you go back and you look at the commercial long position, outright long position in wheat has actually been going up generally for the last year. That suggests to me that the end users out there, whether they be flour millers or bread bakers or whoever, actually are looking at the price and going, I can live with that. You know, they're finding price levels that they feel somewhat comfortable with, you know, and I think that really tempers how much weakness we can really have.
One more question for you, Roy. The numbers you're using, are they predicated on normal growing season and normal crop sizes in the United States?
Well, absolutely. I mean, you have to assume that we're going to grow a crop. If we have a major, major weather change, all of this goes out the window. But just let me give you an example. World corn inventories 4 years ago, ending stocks were 138 million tons. This year, not next year, this year, they're 207 million tons. Wheat stocks 4 years ago were 176 million tons. This year, they're 237 million tons. Bean stocks 4 years ago was 56 million tons. This year they're 79 million tons. We have more than we know, more than we need. And I think that the expansion in world production is pretty well indicated. We have a problem in the FSU where they didn't get all their winter wheat planted, and where they probably are going to have a wheat crop that's 20 or 25% lower than it was last year. Guess what they're going to put it in, guys? Barley and corn. So nobody is going to let the current prices slow down production in a foreign environment. In the U.S., we're dealing with a farmer that I believe thinks he can outgrow the prices. We had 48 bushel bean yields last year, and we had 168 bushel corn yields last year. And if I take those, anything close to those, my revenue tables at today's prices, using 60 bushel beans, they're making $365 net an acre, and 225, or I don't care what you want to use, 200 bushel corn, they're making $304 an acre net. Those aren't bad incomes. They're just not as big as what we've had over the last 3 or 4 years. And I don't see any black dirt that doesn't get planted this year.
Interesting to think about, because really what you've the case that you've laid out sets the U.S. farmer as the marginal producer who should enter and exit the market based on commodity prices year in and year out. Let's get a final word from each of you, and I'll start with you, Roy Huckabee.
Well, I hope I'm wrong, because what I'm afraid of is that these markets do come back and enter into a more negative phase, and it's not good for my business. It's not good for agriculture in general. It's revenue from equipment sales, fertilizer sales, everything will go pretty negative, because if we take these prices down, next year we will see a big reduction in acres. Pain won't be felt this year, but it'll be felt next year. And I'm worried about what it takes to bring prices back out of the doldrums there if we do go that low.
Roy Huckabee, of course, is with the Lynn Group out of Chicago, Illinois. Dale Durkles is from AgriVisor in Bloomington, Illinois. Dale?
You know, the one thing, and I'll reiterate what Roy has to say, and I don't discount his outlook that he has. I just have some timing indicators tell me that, you know, things are going to change here and maybe change for the next 12 to 18 months. But the kind of things he's talking about eventually could come back and haunt the market. My biggest fear at this point is markets do turn around a little bit. Farmers become more comfortable, not realizing there really is a huge problem out there in the world with the amount of land we've brought into production back here in the 2010s.
Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing from here in Champaign County.
Well, I'll just go back to the report next week. I think one of the things that drives the markets is not necessarily what the numbers are, but it's what the numbers, what people think the numbers are, and then if they're different than that or different than their expectations. And when you look at the stocks report over the last 6 years, we've had an average of about 200 million bushels difference on the March corn stocks report than what the expectations were, in different ways, sometimes over, sometimes under. So the likelihood of having some kind of surprise is there, I think. I think that will move the market. I think you try to put yourself in a position to be able to take advantage of that, because it is the expectations that people have going into a major report like this versus what actually comes out. So, and I also just add, everybody, probably the last time I'm on here before planting, have a safe spring and planting season.
Thank you so much, Bill. And Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana.
Well, we've got two varying opinions here today, definitely. It's nice to have some good hope, and I hope that there's just a little bit of a setback for me to get long, because I'm a little bit more of a fundamentalist like Mr. Huckabee. So I think that we've got a lot of opportunities coming ahead. I don't think we want to rush in too heavily. I think there's a lot of chance for a lot of weather and a lot of things to happen before this crop's done.
Wayne Nelson is with L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. Helps us wrap up this March 24 edition of Commodity Week. Our other panelists have included Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing from right here in Champaign County, Dale Durkles of AgriVisor LLC from Bloomington, Illinois, and Roy Huckabee of the Lynn Group out of Chicago. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may find us online at WILLAG.org.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at agrigold.com.